I'm Gab, he's Jules, Blue Skies over West London. Jules, it is the last Gab and Jules show of the 22-23 season.
What a season.
We'll be going on hiatus, but before that, we've got a packed show for you because there is a ton going on.
Yeah.
Transfer-wise, manager-wise, finally, the Carlo Ancelotti saga is over. Declan Rice, official.
Yes.
So much to talk about, but we're going to start and I think this will have some shelf life over the summer. The FC 100.
Oh.
Now, you know my views on awards, on rankings.
You know a ranking man.
Especially when there's a vote. You know, I don't believe in democracy when it comes to it. I believe in oligarchy of one deciding.
And
but
yours?
But this one's a bit different. So the FC 100 is out. The way we do this at ESPN, for those who don't know, is we basically divide footballers up into nine different positions.
That's right.
And we ask, we try to be as comprehensive as we can. We ask our ESPN family members from Latin America, from Australia, from Africa, from Asia, North America, Europe.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a vote.
Yeah.
And then we develop this ranking. There's a vote for managers as well.
Yeah.
There's 10 per position plus 10 managers, hence the FC 100. I want to stress the criteria before people flip out. Feel free to flip out and disagree, but you have to know what the criteria are. Because
yes.
Unlike
the rules.
Yes, the rules. Unlike the Ballon d'Or, unlike the FIFA the Best Awards,
yeah,
which have fuzzy criteria which nobody follows,
yeah,
we actually have criteria. Not everybody follows them, I suspect, but we have criteria. The idea is simply, who is the best? Who's
yeah.
the best? Not who had the best season, not
yeah.
who scored a hat-trick in a World Cup final.
Although that counts. That can count if you think that, you know, that helps being
If you
best.
Think that's more relevant than scoring a hat-trick against Clermont Foot.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But also, it means maybe more than what you did 15 years ago.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. And we come up with these rankings.
Yeah.
We're not going to go through them all one by one because that would be boring and redundant. But I'm just curious, what did you learn kind of participating in this, voting on it? What I know you've got one major bone to pick.
Yes. First, I took it far too seriously because everybody has an opinion, you know, but when the opinions of other people is not enough closer to mine, then I've got an issue. The biggest one, I think, is that Rodri, for me, should be the number one in the central midfielder category. Instead, Jude Bellingham is first and Rodri is second just behind. I can understand that and you make a good case for it. I think I also make a good case for Rodri being the best, just the best. Okay, maybe there's more potential and certainly a much younger player in Jude Bellingham. But right now, I think Rodri is the best. Sure. Andre Onana is not in the best 10 goalkeepers in the world is a bit strange as well. But then I think there will be food for thought for everyone. Some will agree, some won't
yeah.
agree.
So what I find really interesting, and obviously there's a ton of Man City players on the list, which you would expect because Man City won the treble. They're really, really good. But I think this is also a reminder that, you know, football is a dynamic. It's a dynamic game. It's a fluid game. And it's really difficult to separate out individuals. I think if you play for a great team, there's a multiplier effect.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any argument that Kevin De Bruyne, who tops our list of attacking midfielders, for example,
yeah.
he has more time on the ball because he's not surrounded by 10 Muppets. He's surrounded by 10 very good players. So
yeah.
the opposition can't key in on Kevin De Bruyne the way you might do otherwise. If Kevin De Bruyne played for Southampton and he was surrounded by those guys,
yeah.
maybe he wouldn't be as productive.
Yeah, maybe.
So I don't quite know how you take it into account, and it becomes kind of like a circular argument because, you know, are these guys good because they play for City, or do they play for City because they're good?
Yeah.
I you know my thoughts on this. I would lean towards the fact that, in part, they are good because they play for City, because I go back to the Manuel Akanji concept. I go back to the Nathan Ake concept, right? Even Riyad Mahrez. These aren't people who, you know, went and came over after winning Ballon d'Ors at Real Madrid and come to City and do the same thing.
Yeah.
These are people who made this clear progress. So I guess what I'm driving at, teamwork really matters in football,
yeah,
especially
for sure.
On a Pep team. Maybe more so than other, maybe certainly basketball sport we both follow, certainly more so, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Jules, one of the things with these sort of popular vote things is that a little bit like the Ballon d'Or. You know my issues there.
Yeah.
Guys who favor big teams and get on television tend to get more votes.
Of course.
I think we've done a little bit better with this in the sense that it's not just, you know, oh, let's name the entire, you know, Real Madrid or City team, although a lot of guys are in there.
Yeah.
And some of them I think we can debate. But I'm going to go through this by position. We're going to go through this quickly. And I'm going to make this very simple. I'm going to tell you who the number one was.
Yeah.
We'll both say if we agree or disagree.
Yeah.
And you look at the list and you tell me if there's anything wrong, somebody who does not belong there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or somebody who should belong.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So goalkeepers, number one, Thibaut Courtois. I got no problem with that whatsoever. I think he is the world number one.
Yeah, me too. Just about, because in distribution and with the ball at his feet, I would want to be more from him or more from my number one. But yeah, I agree with you.
When you go play beach football, I think that becomes important.
Of all people saying that, you know this is not true.
Anybody on here who shouldn't be on here? Who you didn't vote for?
Yeah, Donnarumma is a bit too high at number six for my liking.
Somebody who doesn't belong in the top 10.
Maybe Nick Pope. Maybe Nick Pope is a bit generous, especially when Andre Onana is not in that top 10.
I just think you don't like tall goalkeepers.
No.
Okay, right backs. Ashraf Hakimi is number one. We talked about this on our show.
Yeah.
On this, the FC 100 special that we did. And by the way, you should go check it out. It's on YouTube. He's almost there by inertia, I think.
He's the best of the not so good ones for the last few weeks.
Anybody here who's missing?
I don't think so. I think this is not as a stronger list as the left backs, but I think everybody's there.
I question Dani Carvajal a little bit.
Still.
But Joe Cancelo, by the way, a good example. Did not have a good season at all.
No.
But he's really, really good.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. True. So that's why he's there. Left backs, number one, Fonzie. Alphonso Davies, yeah, that was your vote?
Yeah, although I think Theo is quite close.
Why did you go with Theo? Because he's not from Paris. He's French, but he's not from Paris.
No, but he's still French. They're just not perfect, neither of them. And I think the left backs is really interesting. We said on the show on YouTube that you have so many different profiles in that left back list and rankings, which makes it fascinating. Some play two positions, some play more as a wing back, more fullback. All of that is great, but I think it's a very strong left back list.
Yeah, Fede Di Marco, I think you could have made a case.
You should have made a case.
Rafael Guerrero, of course, we've seen so much more of him in central midfield
Zinchenko
late in the season as well. Zinchenko, the way he plays it, is he basically a midfielder? You could make a case that Theo, of course, Trent Alexander-Arnold is heading in that direction as well.
Yeah.
Among the center backs, Ruben Dias, was he your number one?
He was the number one. And who's the number two again?
Some guy named Josko Gvardiol.
Yeah, again, I think if right now you said that they are the two best center backs in the world, I don't think there's an issue. You can maybe make a case for another one there and there, but I think they're pretty good. What's interesting in that list is the age of most of the top six players, because Araujo is young, Gvardiol is really young. I mean, Dias is still young. You've got a lot of under 25s in that top 10.
That's right. You can certainly ask add Bastoni to it as well, Adrian Militao. The one guy who some might not be so sure about, who seems to be on the slide, and some people might say that his fellow center back is better, is Virgil van Dijk.
Yes. I think this might be the last time that he's in that top 10. He's at 7. Even David Alaba at 3 is maybe a little bit high.
Central midfield.
Here we go.
I disagree with this one. I had Jude Bellingham at number 1. You had Rodri.
I think, I as much as I love Jude Bellingham, and the potential is incredible, the talent is great, the maturity for a 19-year-old, everything you want. But Rodri is the best central midfielder in the world right now. It's just, he has everything. There's a lot of things maybe that Jude Bellingham can do. Not a lot. There's some things maybe that Jude can do that Rodri cannot do, but there's not many. And even, there's not many. What? Tell me what?
Just because Rodri had a couple rockets from outside the box, I don't know. And I think Jude Bellingham running at people, taking them on, beating them, I don't think it's something that you expect Rodri to do.
But that's not what his role is either.
Well, that's fine. So those are things that Bellingham does that Rodri doesn't do.
But they don't play the same position either. They're both central midfielders, but with slightly different profiles. Right now, if I was a sporting director, I'd get Rodri in my team.
If you asked Bellingham to sit in front of the back four, could he do it?
Not with the same efficiency.
Not as well as Rodri, exactly. But he could do it, yeah. Right?
If you ask Rodri to dribble and make runs from deep into the box, he can do it. Not as well as Jude, but he can still do it.
Okay, but I think the gap would be much bigger between Rodri playing as a number 10, getting forward, beating
people. Different skill set.
Right, but then Jude Bellingham sitting in front of the back four, reading the game, intercepting passes, winning the ball back, right?
Yeah, then put him in as an attacking midfielder then.
He's an all-rounder.
As a central midfielder.
Well, this is the thing. The guy's number three. And by the way, for me, there's very little gap between the top three.
Yeah,
in fact, I don't remember if I had Rodri at two or three, but Pedri is in there too.
Incredible.
And again, we don't judge on season. Not the best season from Pedri.
No.
But he is a phenomenal footballer.
Incredible, yeah.
And he's still kind of growing into what his role is going
to
be.
Yeah, exactly. All of this is very new to him. Compared to Bellingham, for example, who... you know, started young and then went to Dortmund even younger. For Pedri to arrive in the way he did at Barcelona and just explode like that on the scenes, it's all very fresh to him. So he's going to get better and better.
Declan Rice, we're going to talk to you later. Not on the list.
That's a mistake.
You had him in there?
Yeah, definitely.
You would have him ahead of Bruno Guimarães, maybe?
Yeah. Huh? I love Bruno, but yeah.
Attacking midfield, number one. It feels like he's number one every year. Kevin De Bruyne. That's who you voted for, yeah?
Yeah, 100%. Just even if, again, at times this season, even Pep Guardiola himself questioned some of the performances from KDB, which was an incredible player. And again, there's a lot of talent on that list, but he is the outstanding number one.
You say there's a lot of talent. I actually think this is a list where there is a big drop-off between the top five, De Bruyne, Odegaard, Bernardo Silva, Musiala, Bruno Fernandes. Gavi, for some reason, is seventh. I would have had him at sixth, ahead of Julian Brandt. And everybody else, because the other guys on the list, Julian Brandt, Brian Diaz, I mean, unless you're related to him or a couple things on TV, but sure. But Lucas Paqueta, okay, the packet, great for West Ham.
Great talent,
but
yeah.
Still.
Yeah,
And Barella, who, you know.
Again, Barella should be higher. Should be higher than Brian Diaz. Barella is a better talent, is a better player than Brian Diaz.
Oh, and by the way, on Barella, some people have queried about, you know, oh, but, you know, he plays. He's one of the midfield three in a 3-5-2. He's not a 10. Attacking midfield doesn't mean 10. It's based on what you actually do during the game.
Yeah.
And if you look at his average positions, you look at where he operates, especially when Inter have the ball, there's no question he is the attacking midfielder with the other two guys often playing deeper.
Yeah.
So that was the criteria we used. Wingers. Now, number one and two on the wingers list are also one and two on the official Gab and Jules 2001 players born, a draft of players born in 2001.
That's right.
Bukayo Saka and Kvicha Kvaratskhelia.
Yeah.
This is a nice little rivalry.
It's lovely.
Are they bird and magic?
Yeah, I mean, I hope for them that they become like that, and that they are successful as bird and magic. I think Kvaratskhelia has to be the new entry, the best new entry ever, because a year ago, we would have never even thought about him for our ESPN FC 100 or any kind of list of rankings before. It shows what an incredible season he had in Naples for his first season in one of the big five leagues. Bukayo Saka is just the star boy, isn't he? An incredible talent, just an incredible kid all around, and I think he deserves his first place.
I had Saka as number one, too. Some of these names on this list, I would query a little bit. I think it's a bit of the multiplier effect we talked about, like playing for Man City. City have three guys on this list. Riyad Mahrez is in at six, Phil Foden at nine, and Jack Grealish at three. Personally, I'm not sure Riyad Mahrez belongs on this list. And the reason I would say that, and I know that, you know, neither Mahrez nor Foden were automatic starters the whole season.
Yeah.
But obviously, say the bar is very high at City. But I would seriously question, if you take these three guys and you put them on, let's go back to Southampton, would they be on this list?
They would still shine, though. I don't know if they would be on the list. It's hard to tell, but...
I think Jack Grealish was, because they do what he did at Villa, just pass the ball for him and he'd keep running until he got fouled or beat everybody and scored. Foden is a big talent. Maybe he would. Mahrez, I don't know. I genuinely...
He's a very skillful player, though. There are not many as skillful as him. That left foot is crazy.
All right, moving on to the forwards. Now, this is where it got interesting. The guy who's number one, Kylian Mbappe. I'm assuming you voted for him. Yes. I voted for him. Yeah. I
only
that.
Voted for him. I had no number two, number three.
Lionel Messi clocks in at three. And again, I repeat this. This is not, oh, but he won the World Cup. No, no. This is where Lionel Messi is right now. And you and I both put Vinicius and Mbappe ahead of him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this. Messi is the GOAT. He's the greatest. He's fantastic. Even at 36 years old, he still deserves to be in that top five because he's still very, very good. We saw that. Maybe not as consistently as before, but because of his age. But he still deserves to be there. That might be the last year where he's there. He might not make the top 10 in the forwards next season, next year. But for now, for what we saw in the first half of the season with PSG at the World Cup, for what we saw previously, for the talent that he has, the personality, the experience, everything, he deserves to be in the top 10.
And among central strikers, again, I think we both had the same guy. Actually, no, you probably had Kareem the Dream.
Kareem the Dream.
Is that who you voted for?
Yeah, it was number one, number two, number three.
No, he didn't.
No, no, no.
He's kidding. We both had Erling Haaland.
Yes.
This is, he came in ahead of Benzema, ahead of Harry Kane, ahead of Victor Osimhen. I don't know about Benzema, too. I'm very honest. I mean, I think when you're Harry Kane, you score 30 goals a season, you have all those assists, you've done it consistently for a long time, you're not moving on to Saudi. I think at some point, Benzema, as phenomenal as he's been, the curve is trending
down. Yeah, for sure. If it's a bit like Messi, it will certainly not be as high next year and might not even be in that list next year.
It's interesting to see, again, this is kind of a next generation thing because you've got older players like Benzema, like Kane, like Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah.
Gabriel Jesus in at six, that's the one I have a bit of an issue with, but whatever. But then you've got Kolomwani, you've got Isak, you've got Vlahovic, you've got Jonathan David, and of course Erling Haaland, still a kid.
Yeah.
So this is something to look forward to.
It's a really good list. It is.
The coaches list.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder who we all voted for number one.
Who could be number one? Let me think.
Okay, so obviously it's Pep. I like the fact that while Italy not very good right now at qualifying for, or rather I should say, while Italy opting right now to give other countries a chance to win World Cups.
Yeah, fair enough. It's very kind of you.
It's very kind of you. It's a nice gesture because after all, there's only one country that has won more World Cups than Italy, right?
True.
But I am kind of excited by the fact that in the top 10, there are no fewer than four Italian managers.
Four.
Wow. Plus Lionel Scaloni, who is clearly of Italian descent and played in Italy. Plus Pep Guardiola, who played in Italy. Xavi, who went on holiday in Italy.
Yeah. So Italy is clearly the thing that in common that all of those people have, right?
Clearly. Erik ten Hag, I don't think he's ever been to Italy. Doesn't seem to be his thing. But still.
His wife Italian, maybe, no?
Let's not go there. Any issues with this?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think you made the criteria on purpose for Carlo Ancelotti so he could be as high as second in the list. Because maybe the season was not of the best, of course, even if there were titles for Real Madrid. But again, as a whole, all around, Carlo, I think, deserved that second place for everything that he is as a manager right now. But Pep, number one, of course, outstanding. And then... it's a strong list. The Zerbi, we said on the show, and we're just going to repeat it quickly, but I think certainly there's three criteria to judge a manager. The success, of course, on the pitch, the trophy that he wins, the style of football, the style of play, and how he improves his own players individually. So collectively, he goes with the style, but individually. And I think of our top 10, a lot of them either have two of the three criteria, some of them, like Pep, of course, all three. Others have maybe just one. But overall, you know that there's something. And if you take De Zerbi, okay, you could say he hasn't even completed a full season at Brighton. But how he took this team forward, qualifying them for the first time ever in Europe, how much some players have improved individually, as Stupinan, Ferguson, McAllister, whoever you want in that team, plus the style of football, makes him very deservedly a place in that top 10.
I think those are great points, and I think some people might query, well, Xavi at number 10.
Maybe a bit low, yeah.
But I think the argument there is, first of all, there's not a long track record, and I know there isn't one with Did Zerbi either, but there is a longer one for Did Zerbi, at least in Europe, significantly longer than Xavi. Two, the fact that Barcelona, I don't think, and Xavi has said this himself, they're not where he wants them to be.
No,
he hasn't been able to get them to play the style that he wants them that he wants them to play, and I think he'll have time to move up the list. But for me, the very simple question: okay, God appears to Nasser Al-Khelaifi and says, "Listen, I'm going to make Luis Enrique go away, and you can have any manager in the world."
Yeah.
So Nasser picks up the phone.
Yeah.
And calls you, Jules.
Yeah.
And says, "Okay, I can have any guy in the world to manage Paris Saint-Germain."
That's an easy
and it's
one.
Not Pep.
Except for Pep. What? What about that?
Yeah, but it's the Abu Dhabi cutter thing, right? Because you know you'd pick out. Who would you pick? Would you pick the guy you put second on the list?
Maybe he's been there before.
That's the criteria.
It's never good to go back, I think.
Okay, so rule him out. Who would you put?
Carlo would do well. I think Klopp would do great. I think Xavi could do well potentially, but it would need a bit of time, and not sure the time is there. Simone Inzaghi, I just don't think he would be happy in the kind of environment that it is. Already at some point at Inter, we saw that all the drama and chaos. So in Paris, he's even more not so sure.
It got to be Klopp.
Luciano Spalletti. I would love Luciano Spalletti. I would love to see it. Can you imagine? I mean, that would be...
Well,
that would be feisty. I don't know. I'm happy with Luis Enrique right now.
Okay. Well, look, and of course, Spalletti has coached in St. Petersburg before.
Yeah.
Lovely, beautiful city. Kind of like Paris, right?
Yeah.
Every planned city, sort of. Okay.
So?
Yeah. It's sort of like Paris. Demented and sad.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Paris.
Yeah,
right?
If you want.
And close to Finland.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough FC 100, but do check it out online. Jules, how about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
The Declan Rice deal to Arsenal is finally done. West Ham will get £100 million up front, plus up to £5 million in bonuses, Jules.
Yeah.
He's not the most expensive English player in history, as I wrote in this thing. He's the most expensive English player in Premier League history.
In Premier League history.
Because Jude Bellingham might have something to say about that.
Yeah, exactly. But it was coming, of course, especially after Man City kind of withdrew, we can put it that way, from the race of signing him.
Were they ever in it?
Exactly. But he wanted to go to Arsenal anyway. Arsenal really wanted him. They think that he can take this team to the next level. And I think he's an amazing talent. I think he's a world-class player. I really do. And I think he will make a big difference for them. So it's a lot of money, of course. It's a record signing for Arsenal in their history too. But I think he's worth it.
Who's moving out?
Thomas Partey?
Partey and Xhaka.
Yeah. And Havertz as an eight, as we said, Odegaard keeping the same position, and Rice will play in front of the back four. Rice can play. The good thing about Rice, he gives you a lot of options. You can play with a double pivot. You can play just with him. I think if you get him to have a fluid midfield, he can even bring you more going forward with the ball. I think he's that good.
I am so intrigued by this Havertz as an eight proposition. I am so curious to see how it works out because the Madden's trying without a position. I still think he can do a job at center forward. He can grow into the position, and I think you know my thoughts on Gabriel Jesus. However, trust in Arteta. This is what he wants to do. Let's see how it works out.
As in Spain, reports that Vinicius Junior has extended his deal with Real Madrid until 2027. Gab, this was important.
Yeah, so it's important in some ways, not so important in other ways, in the sense that I think his previous deal was 2025, so you can make the point.
There was still time.
What if he works his thing down and then he goes, I just couldn't see Vinicius Jr. deciding, oh, look, I'm going to go to Paris Saint-Germain or whatever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
So I think he was always going to extend. It was a question of time. It's important that he feels rewarded. By the way, I say this all the time, caveat, when people say, like, oh, look, he has a 1 billion euro release clause. Like, just go and laugh at them. Almost every contract in Spain has a release clause.
It
doesn't mean anything. A billion euros, who cares? But Real Madrid aren't done. They're reportedly close to locking up 18-year-old Turkish prodigy Arda Güler from Fenerbahçe. I've never seen him in the flesh. I have only seen him on YouTube. In two dimensions, he looks pretty special.
He looks very special, Gab. That left foot is incredible. Really, really lethal. He's not ready yet, but like Vinicius wasn't ready or Rodrigo wasn't really ready when they moved.
Hendrik isn't ready?
Hendrik isn't ready, exactly. But yeah, it's an amazing talent that other clubs like Barcelona, for example, were really keen on signing as well. So I think well done because it's actually like a decent fee. I think it's 20 million euros.
20 million euros because he had a release clause. Yeah. I think there's some bonuses involved, a bit over the release clause. And you know, in these situations, whoever's doing the deal gets a massive commission.
True.
But still, given the hype, it's a great price.
Yeah,
what he reminded me of? I mean, people comparing to Messi, I think it's a different body type than Messi. He reminded me, there's videos of a very, very young João Felix at Sporting, which are on YouTube, like when he was like 16, 17 years old. I see more of the parallel there.
Before he went to Benfica, even?
Sorry, yeah.
Oh, Benfica.
Benfica, I meant, like, before I went to Atleti anyway. I think before maybe from, like, the youth team. Like, that, I kind of saw a bit of that. Hopefully, things turn out better for him
let's hope. But, yeah, amazing talent. So.
Do you think he's going to get playing time? Because if they end up not signing a center forward, which I'm assuming they're going to sign Killian to play somewhere.
Yeah.
But
if they don't, you could play Rodrigo centrally, Vinicius on the left, and Güler
and
on the right.
And sort of some Güler, Valverde.
I think the good thing with Güler is that you can play him, again, he can play as a 10 behind a striker, he can play a bit deeper, I think, because technically he's so, so gifted.
Right.
And he can play on the right as an inverted winger coming inside onto his left foot, which I think would work really, really well. And you just imagine the combination between him, Rodrigo, Vinicius, plus the midfielder that he will have behind, whether that's Bellingham, Tchouaméni, Camavinga, Cruz, Modric. I mean, it's just crazy to just add another weapon to it.
And my understanding is Mariano Diaz hasn't signed with another club, so they could always bring him. No, just kidding, Real Madrid fans.
Meanwhile, Gab, Mauricio Pochettino arranged for an Argentine barbecue on his first day in the job at Chelsea. And he says that joining the club was an easy decision and that in the last 10, 12, 15 years, Chelsea were the greatest club in England.
Yeah,
I'm sure Spurs fan will
that
appreciate
point,
that.
I don't know if it was wise to go and like it sounds like it's trying too hard. But you know what? I like the Argentine thing. You see him; he's all smiley and stuff. I like it when you have happy Poch. Is it an easy decision? Sure. You're unemployed. You get to move back to London. You get to manage a club that historically has been really big.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a decision. Yeah. Jules, the saga is finally over. Carletto Ancelotti will leave Real Madrid at the end of the season and take over Brazil as boss ahead of the 2024 Copa America, right through the 2026 World Cup if Brazil qualify. In the meantime, Fernando Diniz will be in charge.
Yeah, he would be in charge. He's a good coach too. But then I think they wanted Carlo. They have Carlo now. They would have to wait a little bit longer. I would expect that Carlo will be involved somehow, even through this season, of what Diniz is going to do. It would be strange for Diniz, let's say, to go and play 3-5-2 and do something completely different than what Carlo would do. I think it would be good for even Carlo to be a little bit involved with Diniz, let's say, when they build up squads, especially when we get closer to the Copa America. Carlo cannot be completely absent of what's going to happen between now and the Copa America.
Florentino's going to agree with that.
No, but what's wrong with the phone call now and again to Fernando Diniz?
Because it takes time away from Real Madrid. It's the biggest job in the world.
I'm sure this is what's going to happen. Okay. I think it's great news for everybody. And now Real Madrid have a year to prepare for who's coming next, which is good too. So, and exactly the next question, Gabby. How should Real Madrid prepare for his succession?
I think very carefully. And I think the preparations should start now. Because obviously they've invested in so many young players. Arda Güler, the latest one, but when you go through it, you've got Rodrigo, Valverde is not old, Bellingham, Camavinga, Tchouaméni, right? So many of these guys. Vinicius is still just 22 years old, right? So they want. I think the main thing you decide is: do you want a guy who's a man manager managing? You know, which I know sounds reductive, or do you want the vision guy?
Yeah, yeah.
On paper, two of the names that have been mentioned: two Real Madrid old boys, Raúl and Xabi Alonso.
Arbeloa, who's done really well as well in the youth teams, like Raul did before he left.
I don't know about it. I would like them to. I think they should cast the net a little bit wider. And when it comes to succession, I think they also need to start thinking. I'm sure Florentino must start thinking. He's not going to be there forever. You should start thinking in those terms as well. Because this club has to transition at some point. And you've got a great core of young players. If it means you have to take a season to grow, then let that happen.
Yeah.
Luis Enrique has confirmed his manager at Paris Saint-Germain, along with a bunch of signings we've already reported on because you told us about them before they were actually made official.
Exactly.
But Jules, you know the one I am most excited about. Cher N'Dour, who scored last night against Malta in the European Under-19, which I know we were both watching.
Yeah, he's an Italian international, 18 years old, as you mentioned, came from Benfica on a free. Tall, strong, very good technically. Some people have said he's the new Pogba. You know, people love giving like nicknames.
I thought
like that.
Ryan Gravenberch was the new Pogba.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of new Pogbas and new Zidanes before and knew plenty of other things. But yeah, I think of all the new signings, you know, Di Ugarte and Lucas Hernandez.
You're most excited about him.
But he's the most under the radar one. I don't really know why. Maybe because people don't know so much or not enough.
He's hardly
about.
Played. I think that's part of it.
Yeah, but he still had a few
under
games.
19s.
He played a lot with Italy at youth level from under 16 to now. I think he's a very exciting prospect, but I think it's also normal that the spotlight should be on Luis Enrique and the bigger names, if you want, that the club are signing now, like Lucas Hernandez, Ugarte, Skriniar.
It's not in my house. In my house is Cher N'Dour.
Exactly. Mason Mount said goodbye to Chelsea after 18 years at the club with a very emotional message.
He did. He said, look, you know, he was really heartfelt. Like, he wouldn't quite cry, but you could... Once he switched the camera off, he probably did. The guy spent 18 years at the club. I don't think it's a secret. It ended badly. It was a massive breakdown in the relationship between the people who look after him. Some of them are family members and the club. And I think it hurt them. It hurt them that they couldn't work out a deal. We can debate the ins and outs, the long-term strategy. But I really like that. I like that rather than, you know, the usual statement written by some PR muppet saying goodbye to the club. This felt really, really hard.
It did.
Southampton value Romeo Lavia at £50 million. And reportedly there's interest from Chelsea, Arsenal and United. Jules, is that a bit over the top for a guy who has one season of top flight football and one more international cap than you do?
Yeah, I think so too, Gav. I think Liverpool are quite keen as well. I think those clubs were keen. And when they were told the price, they think, okay, maybe not. Maybe we should wait. It's a player that can play, that will play or could play in the Championship next season. And as talented as he is with his age too and with the potential that he has, yeah, of course, you can pay that now and take the gamble because it might be worth 80 million in 2 years. I don't know. But it's still a lot of money for someone with so little experience.
So Man City have a buyback clause on him for 45 million.
Yeah.
Which I'm told actually doesn't take effect until next summer.
That's right.
Obviously, he would still need to agree to return to Manchester City. But if you're City, you'd be getting into his ear and say, like,
don't go anywhere.
Dude. Spend the season in the Champions.
That's if they believe in him. If they want him back.
Right, but I mean they're hedging their bets. Why not? In a year from now, who knows?
Yeah, true.
I mean,
true.
Maybe they don't love Rodri as much as you do.
Inter have their midfield to replace Marcelo Brozovic, who left obviously to go to Saudi Arabia. It's Sassuolo's Davide Fratesi. Gab is €33 million, rising to 38 with bonuses, and it's one of those loan with obligations to buy. Are you excited?
Yeah, loan with obligations to buy is purely an accounting
deferring
to do further payments. I think it's quite a bit of money. I mean, he's had his ups and downs.
Yeah.
He's a very exciting player. He's got a great personality. He gets forward. He's very dynamic. I'm excited that they're adding dynamic players. And I think, you know, him and Barella, you know, that is a bang-bang midfield. Compared to Brozovic, obviously, he lacks Brozovic's experience. He lacks Brozovic's
different
quality.
Different profile, yeah.
Different profile. I think Brozovic is well ahead of him right now. In fact, Brozovic at his age was well ahead of him. But I love his personality. I love the intensity he brings. Robert Sanchez is the latest name popping up in the Manchester United goalkeeper bingo after David Raya, Andre Onana, Justin Billow.
Yeah.
Does this make sense?
I mean, I think they're going down the pecking order in the sense that we know they can't afford Andre Onana and pay £50 million for a goalkeeper. Even 40 for Raya, I think, is too high. Sanchez is now the number three in the hierarchy at Brighton, right? They signed Verbruggen, the very exciting young goalkeeper. They still have Jason Steele, who finished last season as the number one, and then Sanchez. Sanchez is a good option. Is he like a world-class goalkeeper? I don't think he is, but he's a good option. He's regularly called up with the Spain national team.
Can I make a suggestion? Given what we know about their budget restrictions, if I'm Manchester United, you know what I do? I take Robert Sanchez on loan.
Me too.
I take him on loan for a season. I spend the money on the center forward that I need, and I'm okay with Robert Sanchez and Tom Heaton, whoever hangs around.
Yeah. Yunus Musa has reportedly agreed personal terms with AC Milan, but Valencia are hoping for a higher offer from elsewhere, like a bit of a bidding war if you want. Gab, it sounds a lot like the Pulisic situation.
It is. I mean, I think, remember way back in the day when, like, especially here in England, they'd report, like, oh, Arsenal have asked Charlton for permission to speak to Kevin Lisby or whatever, right? I was like, oh, no, he's being tapped up.
How come Charlton and Kevin Lisby came to your mind?
I don't know. He was the first Charlton player I thought of. This is all different now, and we know this. It's been like this for a long time. We cut through the pretensions. There is no tapping up. There's no tampering.
No.
You make the deal with the player first. Musa, they have the deal in place. They have to negotiate with Valencia. Same thing with Pulisic. Reinders, a slightly different situation. They still hope to bring in Chukwueze. They need the center forward. They've been linked with Scamacca. You like Scamacca?
Take him on loan. Take him on from West Ham.
Scamacca, Giroud, those are two very large men.
Strong men.
Up front, one more handsome and less tattooed than the other, but still.
Yeah, still.
Why not? Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. Steven Gerrard is the new manager of Al Ittihad in the Saudi Pro League.
Yes.
Jules, they're not one of the country's big spending clubs.
That's
right. You're a bit surprised?
They're not owned by the PIF, like the four biggest ones, let's put it that way.
They're owned by other wealthy investors, but they haven't smashed the country.
Not yet, but maybe they need the manager first, and then with his vision and what he wants to do, they can go and get him the players that he wants to fit that vision.
Yeah, I honestly looked at the list of foreign players.
Yeah,
distinctly unimpressive relative to two other clubs.
To the right. There's still time to catch up, I guess.
It's weird. When we were in the Gulf, he's got some tie up with some company out there and stuff. He was like on television all the time. He seems to have a pretty high profile there.
Yeah, yeah.
I do wonder about this, like I'm sure he's well compensated, but
because he said no to them first, remember? He turned them down.
Yeah.
And now maybe because he didn't get anything else.
I just wonder, are you going to grow professionally? I could see maybe you would. I mean, it is an experience abroad. We've always said it's good. But are you going to grow professionally if you're at a club like that? I mean, if you're at, you know, Al Nassr or Al Ittihad, you're working with other legends, you know, they can teach you something, I guess.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. Rudy Garcia went when the team Al Nassr were not very good.
Right, but I'm assuming
Cristiano, and now he's in Naples. So
I'm assuming Steven Gerrard has a much, much, much bigger bank balance than Rudy Garcia
does. I know, but still, to show you that you can still, after Saudi, go to a top club.
Oh, yeah. No, no question.
More scout Saudi moves, Gabby. Roberto Firmino has been unveiled as Al Ahly. And there's plenty of speculation that Thiago Alcantara might be joining him out there in Saudi. Would he leave a hole at Liverpool? How do you see that move?
So the early indications, and look, if you put money on the table, maybe they'll change your mind. He's got a year left on his contract.
Yeah.
I don't know how hard. I don't think Liverpool are going to give him a new one because of the injuries and the
his age.
Age.
Yeah.
I think he's different to the other midfielders. Look, and I've had the same line about Thiago Alcantara all along, right? When they signed him, given his age and his wages, I thought, okay, you're just signing him for those specific games where the opposition parked the bus. I didn't see him as like a week-in, week-out player because it was unlikely he was going to be fit. I think he's very different from the other midfielders they have, even you know, the quality ones that they add in Szoboszlai and McAllister. They're not really perceptive passers the way Thiago Alcantara
McAllister is.
But not to a level of Thiago, right? So I don't know. I think if Thiago decides, you know what, I'm going to stick around, take a run at the Premier League and the Europa League this season, and then let's have this conversation in a year's time, I think that will be good for Liverpool. I think if he moves, I think they should think about how they might want to bring in that type of skill set.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't exist. You're not going to need it every game, but there's games when you'll need it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know Trent in midfield, we'll see about that, but come
on. Yeah.
The assault case against Fede Valverde has been dropped by Spanish court after his alleged punch on Villarreal's Alex Baena. But Jules, he's not off the hook yet in terms of sporting justice, where he's still facing a 5-match ban.
Yeah, that's right. But you remember the incident after the game where allegedly Valverde waited for Baena, who made some comments about Valverde's girlfriend being pregnant at the time and the baby, etc., etc., and punched him in the face. At least on that level, in terms of court and the law, is cleared. But you're right. I think he could still be banned for the start of next season if he was again proven guilty for the league.
Yeah, what I'm not clear on, because I'm not a lawyer and I haven't reviewed the court documents and I don't believe they've been issued yet, is the court saying that he didn't punch him, or did this court saying there's not enough proof that he punched him?
Yeah.
Or is the court saying that he punched him, but it's okay because Alex...
Surely that can't be it. No, I thought it was a lack of proof.
Lack of evidence that it actually happened, right?
Yeah.
So if there's lack of evidence that actually happened, then it comes down to, just explain this. We see this happen in the Premier League and in different leagues. Sporting justice, it's on the balance of probability. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt, right? So the standard of proof required is much lower in sporting justice. So I could still be open. I don't know. I mean, the court, I guess, it will certainly be weird if they go against the court.
Yeah, definitely. Wilfried Zaha is a free agent, as we know, and reportedly has four different options. Fenerbahce in Turkey, Al Nassr in Saudi Arabia, Lazio in Italy, or he can stay at Crystal Palace. Gab, what do you think he's going to do?
It's funny because I think he's ready to move. I would like him to move.
Yeah,
him to move. He's been there forever.
He ran down his contract for a reason, right? It was not to stay.
I don't know. Look, and Palace have offered him, I think, a very generous contract. I think it's 4 years. It's a lot of money. But you know what, dude? You're 30. You've made your money.
Yeah.
You know what's happening next season because Uncle Roy's coming back.
Yeah.
So you now know exactly how you're going to play, whatever.
Yeah.
You know it's probably going to be for a year. And then you'll have to deal with another manager. Why not have another experience now?
I agree with you completely.
I'm assuming Al Nassr would be
the most lucrative,
and you would get to play with that Cristiano Ronaldo fella. That could be
fun. That's pretty good.
Fenerbahce and Lazio, you both have European football.
Yeah.
You both have Champions League football.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I mean, maybe Zaha played in the Champions League when he was at United,
but
maybe,
not much. Anyway,
but not much. And that was a different Zaha back then. I'd love to see him at Lazio.
What could go wrong?
What could possibly do? I think that would be fun. Fenerbahce as well. You know, I think he wants a big club, big audience, big stadium, full.
Yeah.
that's where I would like to see him. Sorry, Palace fans, but look, if he feels loyal for Palace, that's okay too.
Yeah.
Daniel Farke is the new manager of Leeds United. Jules, I'm not going to make the joke again about what he looks like, about his appearance. Don't. So I'll just ask you, is this a good choice?
I'm not too sure, Gabby. Patrick Vieira was the leading contender, and then he decided to go to Strasbourg, and then they went for Farke. Yeah, of course, he got Norwich promoted to the Premier League when he was there.
With a smaller budget than he's likely to have in Leeds. Smaller budget,
okay, fair enough, that's good. Leeds, who, by the way, are losing Brendan Aaronson, who's going to go on loan to Union Berlin. But why not? The problem I have is that if the ambition is to go back up, and then you know that this guy struggled before in the Premier League, it's a bit like, okay, midterm vision is to go up, and then what? You go up with him and it's just not worked because he's not good enough for the Premier League?
Well, then you replace him.
He was not good enough for the Bundesliga last season either.
The last time he was in the Premier League with Norwich, I mean, other than my man Todd Cantwell, who I thought was good and then disappeared, and the other fullback who we thought was good and then...
Max Aarons,
yeah, we thought was good and then disappeared.
Yeah, are we still there?
What? Was he still... remember at some point he's like, £40 million bid.
Barcelona want him. Yeah.
What are they going to do? What's he going to do with these? You know, he's going to have better players at Leeds United.
I still don't think he's good enough anywhere. Full stop. Even if he's got like you, me, or Messi, or Cristiano, I just don't think he's a very good manager.
Maybe we need to move beyond this idea that I hire a manager and like, oh, you got them promoted, so that means you need a job until you get relegated again. Maybe we need to go beyond that. Maybe Farke is the right manager to get them promoted.
Yeah.
And then you revisit your progress, project, and see who fits.
Okay, maybe. This was what you were aware, Gab, but I'm dying to get your take on this.
New
allegations against Manchester City were in that documentary that aired on YouTube last week by a mysterious media company nobody had ever heard of. And could this impact on the Premier League's case against them?
So I brought this up. The story is like a week old, but I brought this up because I think there's a lot of cloak and dagger stuff going on here.
I started watching watching the documentary.
And then you got bored.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can read, there was a story in the Times. The Times also had access to some documents. Basically, if you take you back to when Manchester City were banned for 2 years, following evidence that was presented in the Der Spiegel Football League's revelations, where essentially, in a very simple way, City were accused of disguising payments from the ownership via sponsors. So basically, the allegation was that the owners would give money to an Emirati company, and then that Emirati company would just take the money and give it back to City as a sponsorship, and then which is obviously illegal. It's a serious violation, right? So we know that CAS overturned this. They overturned that because UEFA based it on two. One was the Etihad sponsorship. The other one was the Etisalat sponsorship. In the Etihad one, the court found that UEFA didn't bring enough evidence to prove their case. And in the Etisalat, they ended up not reviewing it because they said it was time barred. There was a statute of limitations, whatever. So now we know how it got to that point, and we know UEFA's rationale for the two-year ban. And the reason I bring this up is, according to them, it went through an intermediary, this mysterious man named Jabir Mohammed, which apparently nobody can find. And they allege that these documents show, and the documents have been reviewed by the Times, they appear to show that this guy paid the money to City. And it's not clear. He's described as a broker. Yeah. A couple of things to say to this. One is, these charges are not time barred as far as the Premier League are concerned. So they could be theoretically, the Premier League have 115 charges against City. Theoretically, they could include them.
Yeah.
The other thing that's weird about this is, this company, Sunrise Media, was only incorporated on June 7th. I think it's in the British Virgin Islands or some dubious place like
that. Yeah, they created it just for that documentary, basically.
Yeah. And so you wonder who's behind it. Because, look, we've done this job for a long time. It's not unusual. It's obviously somebody leaked it from... not so much UEFA, because the court is independent, but, you know, whatever the adjudicatory chamber, maybe it's a clerk, whoever it is, right, decided we want these documents to be out there. Maybe they can be useful for the Premier League. That part, I think, is very obvious. What's not obvious then is who goes and pays to set up a media company and produce a documentary? Yeah. I mean, we're in the world of like troll farms or whatever. Who doesn't like Manchester City that much that they would go and do this?
Yeah, that's true.
But whatever, it'll come out in the wash, we assume. Yeah. Alessia Russo has joined Arsenal as, or I'm sorry, should I say Alessia Russo has joined Arsenal as a free agent for Manchester United. Jules, this is a coup, right?
Yeah, I think it is, because 6 months ago they made a big offer, actually the most expensive transfer offer.
So that's a question as somebody who doesn't really follow women's football, but yeah. I'm assuming, okay, Arsenal have a different sporting director for the women's side, right?
Yeah. Well, although Edu is very much involved in the women's side as well.
Okay. If Edu made a world record bid for somebody who was 6 months away from free agency, I'm assuming he would get he would get sacked straight away, right?
No, because
does it work different in the women's game?
It's just it's half a million pounds. It's 500,000.
But it's a record.
But even in the budget for Arsenal women team, it's
so why is it a world record?
Because transfer fees in the women's game are very, very low.
And are you not allowed in the women's game to go and commit? And to go and, you know, when in the men's game when you're 6 months out.
I don't know either. I don't know why.
Maybe so she could have signed season for free.
Yeah, but she maybe just waited.
And she could have gotten a chunk of that half a million pounds for herself, right? I mean,
yeah, I don't think it works like that. But yeah, so I think she just waited to see if Arsenal still wanted her, maybe, or if there was an injury. I don't know, right? Anything. But the fact is, she signed now. She's very happy. I think it's a great, great signing because Vivian Miedema's contract is coming to an end soon. Black Stenius has a longer contract. Beth Mead also renewed, but you've got plenty of options like that. And I think if you can get Alessia Russo on a free, you just take it.
Does this mean Arsenal are now the second or third most talented women's team in the world?
Maybe. Why not the first?
Well, I don't know. Because Barcelona are really good.
Yeah, no, Barcelona, Chelsea, but they're there. They're semi-finalists of the Champions League. So
I'm going to say this again because this bugs the crap out of me. Okay, when it comes to women's football, FIFA, why can't we? I know you're into Women's World Cup for men. Why don't we have a Women's Club World Cup for women so that we can see how would these teams, European teams, actually fare against the NWSL sides, who I'm told are also really good, right? Why?
Yeah, you're right. Even in Mexico, for example, you know, Jenny Hermoso, the Spanish really, really good player, moved to Mexico and he's very happy there. I would love to see a Mexican side
and
playing.
And there's money in Australia as well. Of course, they have a professional league too.
I'm with you. Osasuna have been excluded for the Europa Conference League for a match-fixing case from a decade ago, as we mentioned it before in a quick hit. It's now been confirmed. Gab, is there no status of limitation in this case?
No, not for something like this. I mean, if it goes to a criminal conviction, then UEFA, with something like match fixing, I think it dates in 2013. I think the final verdict came out in like 2020 or something like that.
Yeah, it took a long time.
Osasuna hadn't qualified for Europe since 2007, I think.
Yeah, 16 years.
So UEFA said, okay, no, it applies now. I mean, they can appeal it, they can take it to CAS, but this means Athletic Bilbao back in
the neighbors.
The Europa Conference League, exactly, the neighbors down the road. Sticking with this, UEFA have rebranded the Europa Conference League as simply the Conference League. Jules, you must be super excited.
So excited. I mean, everybody kept saying the Conference League anyway, even before not many people used to say the Europa Conference League, and it was very confusing with the Europa League as well. So I think...
You know what? One of the reasons they did this is apparently on social media, they were running out of characters. No, it was hard to fit everything in without making it look stupid.
I'm not surprised, yeah. Well done. Conference League, you know. This is good.
I would go with UEFA Europa Conference League of Nations myself.
Oh my God, I love that. Chaglar Soyuncu joins Atletico Madrid as a free agent from Leicester. Gav, do you think he can relaunch his career over there?
He's 27 years old.
Still young. There's still a player there.
He had a bad injury. He was not good when he played last year. He doesn't fit at all with what Enzo Maresca is trying to do at Leicester.
Yeah.
But there was a good player in there. I think he can regain his mojo. He certainly seems like a Cholo Simeone-type player.
Yeah.
It's a club with the right culture for it. It's a free transfer. I assume this is pretty low risk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ben Brereton Diaz to Villarreal on a free transfer is all done. Jules, I know you're a fan.
I'm a big fan. What an incredible story. What a really good player to start with. And I can't wait to see him in La Liga and see how well he does or not. But love the story. Obviously, became this Chile legend, if you want, hero, after making his debut and doing really well in the Copa America and everywhere, and establishing himself as a great squad member for Chile is great. And now he got the big move that maybe could have come earlier. He's still a young player. But
24, I think?
Yeah, I wonder why he stayed that long for Blackburn. Maybe he just wanted to run down the contract and then it's easier for him to move then and go to Villarreal. What a great experience this is going to be.
And he's going to fill Nicholas Jackson's big
shoes. Exactly, yeah, to replace Nico Jackson. Gab, we like to check on this story occasionally, but it's been more than 12 months now since the sanctions for the war in Ukraine forced Roman Abramovich to sell Chelsea. Todd Boehly and friends paid the £2.5 billion, and we were told it would go into a special fund to help the victims of the war in Ukraine. Why is the money still sitting in Abramovich's account, though, Gab?
That's a really good question. I think this is an underreported story.
You said that every 4 weeks we do this quick hit.
Because we're the only people talking about it. No, seriously. The Times write about it, and we do. Nobody talks about this.
I know.
It all has to do with government rules and lawyers. This
what
foundation.
Lawyers? Who's blocking what? Like, who is blocking this?
So, basically, there's different rumors about what's actually happened. So it took the government a long, long time to create the legal framework for this foundation to operate. They hired a guy who used to work for UNICEF named Mike Penrose. He's supposed to administer this foundation. One of the hurdles right now seems that, according to EU law, and you may wonder why this government's governed by EU law when we're post-Brexit, they're not in the EU. Well, that's because Roman Abramovich, of course, is a Portuguese citizen.
Of course.
Let's not go down that route. So basically, the EU says you have to spend this money within the Ukrainian borders. And so you can't go and spend it on, say, Russian victims of the war in Ukraine.
Right.
They're objecting, saying, no, we want to help Ukrainian refugees. We want more latitude. So they're working on this. I honestly am absolutely appalled. What I would have done, if the government can basically force them to sell, you say very simply, no, Mike Penrose and UNICEF and Foundation, these are the rules. We decide where you're going to spend the money. We're just going to take this from you, and that's it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'll see you in court. You know, and I still think if Abramovich had fought this in court, just sat there with his frozen assets,
he
could have waited too. It's $2.5 billion, by the way. I don't even want to calculate what, given interest rates have risen. Like, there's a couple hundred million extra there now, right?
Surely,
I mean,
surely.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Jonas Hoffmann will move from Borussia Mönchengladbach to Bayer Leverkusen for around $10 million. Jules, this turned Xabi Alonso's team into a contender now.
I think that makes them better. He's a really good player. I think $10 million is cheap. I think he had maybe 1 year left on his contract.
Yeah, I think he had a release clause even.
Oh, release clause even. So well done. It gives you different options for what Xabi is trying to build over there, especially if they stay with a 3-5-2 formation or 3-4-3 formation. That would be really good. I think maybe he stayed at Gladbach a little bit too long. Maybe. So now this is a good move for him going forward as well. Over to Bayern now. Reports in Germany said that they're pursuing Valencia's Georgi Mamardashvili. Sorry. Sorry, Georgi. I guess it's because they don't have enough goalkeepers, right? With Nubel, Neuer, Sommer.
Jan Ulrich. Oliver Kahn, now that he's no longer CEO as well.
Imagine, yeah.
Because they're playing, it's Tuchel's new idea. Let me play six goalkeepers.
Stop being mean with Tuchel. Lately, you've been really mean.
No, I am guessing that they're going to, if Neuer's back and Tuchel decides that he wants, after his skiing accident, and he wants to start, obviously they signed Jan Sommer, those two veterans. Sommer to me becomes a commodity that you can loan for a club
that's, true.
For,
for example, to a club that's looking maybe for a one-year loan of a goalkeeper.
My God, Manchester United.
Exactly.
Hey,
funny that. That wouldn't be a bad shout. Alexander Nubel, who is
wants
younger,
to be number one.
Talented, wants to be number one. He's also available. I think you, I don't know if they'd loan, I mean, I guess they'd have no choice but to loan him again, but they probably want to sell him as
well.
Yeah,
maybe.
Hey, Nubel's not terrible, is he? Yeah, you're making your face.
Monaco hasn't been great.
So maybe, I'm guessing they hope to shift two of those three guys and then bring in Mamardashvili maybe as the heir to Neuer if they're going to pursue this.
Yeah.
Some kind of insurance.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything happens until they move
Sommer
and Nubel. And I think that could run until the end of the window. So we could well be talking this after we come back next season. Didier Drogba has launched a campaign to protect young footballers from unlicensed agents who might exploit them. Jules, we've all heard a ton of horror stories here.
Yeah, we have. And I think it's a really good initiative from Drogba, especially in Africa where there's always a lot of talents. Their dream is to come to Europe, for example, and they are taken by some not very good person, let's put it that way. And you're right, we've heard some stories where, you know, the kid would turn up in France, in Belgium, in wherever, in Eastern Europe, and nobody was waiting for him. He would be completely lost. And often they would have to pay those unlicensed agents to leave their country, wherever they're from. So it's a really good initiative. I think that FIFA should do more, UEFA. I think even, you know, they're trying to... We mentioned that FIFA were trying to restructure the agent business in a way with new license, etc. I think this is also something they could be looking at.
So you'd want them to set up some body to go and police this, to handle complaints?
Yeah, exactly. Certainly for the complaints, yeah. I mean, I think in a lot of cases we know who the intermediary guys are, and we've heard so many stories, as we said, that maybe this could be prevented at the start of it. I understand it's not easy to police, but I think maybe more could be doing for that, because at the end, he often ends up in a disastrous situation for the kids. Roma, one step closer to Adama Traore. Gab, is he a good fit for Jose Mourinho?
For Jose Mourinho, where he is now, 100%. Stick him out wide, have him run at people, knock them over, wreak havoc. The ball bounces, ends up with Dybala. He tees it up for Tammy.
Imagine Dybala passing the ball to Adama Traore.
And never getting it back.
Never.
No, funny enough, I wonder who Adama Traore's agent is.
Let me think. Okay.
Look, he's not a terrible player. He has a pretty singular, I think it's fair to say, skill set, in that he's strong and he's fast and he runs at people.
Yeah.
His passing isn't great. His finishing isn't great.
No.
But I think a lot of times when, in the way Mourinho's playing right now, he wanted those guys who can take on an opponent one-on-one, who can create something out of nothing, because it was more about that than about patterns of play, right?
So
he has that in Spinazzola, who may yet be sold. He has that in Dybala.
Yeah.
Traore is another weapon. Why not? Jules, your pal John Joe Shelby was trending earlier this week on social media here in England. Why?
Yeah, that's right. Because this girl told a great story, I think. I know you're not too keen, but I think it's a great story. Basically, she meets in a club John Joe Shelby, Chris Wood, and Jesse Lingard, so three Nottingham Forest players.
The Adams family, basically.
The Adams family, if you want to. I knew that joke was coming. She goes back to John Joe Shelby's place with the other two. And as they're there, guess what John Joe Shelby does? What he puts on TV? Not Strictly Come Dancing, not the X Factor or whatever, Pop Idol or something, not a football match, not an NBA basketball match. He puts his own highlights on YouTube of his own career.
Which he made himself.
Which, I think maybe maybe. But like, imagine the girl sitting there on the sofa with Wood, Lingard and Shelby and just looking at John Joe Shelby saying, hey, look at the diagonal there, 70 yards. Look at this free kick for Newcastle 10 years ago.
Right.
I mean, what is he trying to do? Like,
I don't want to be cruel to John Joe Shelby because I know this is going to make him the subject of much mockery. And already has done.
Well, he's trying to impress her or something. Say, hey, look how good I was when I was to play, because now he's not playing much anymore.
We don't know the context. We don't know if she said, oh, John Joe, you know, please show me your highlight video. We don't know any of this. I want to give him the benefit.
Maybe not.
You know, but I will say this about John Joe Shelby, because those three, Chris Wood, Jesse Lingard, John Joe Shelby, very mockable, you know, players in many ways, right?
Yeah, yeah.
his highlight video, actually, given that he was a ridiculously, or still is, I guess, ridiculously gifted passer of the ball, and he's had a couple long-range rockets, at least he has a freaking highlight video.
Yeah, yeah. If you show Chris Wood's highlight, I'm not really sure how far much we go. But that reminded me of this great story from Emmanuel Adebayo, who used to sleep with a pyjama on, and the pyjama was his Arsenal shirt. So the guy slept in his own
game-worn jersey.
Yeah, I mean, it shows how much you love yourself as a player, which is good.
Or how much you love your club. He loved Arsenal so much that he never left.
Wear teammates one then if you want. Don't wear your own, man. Come on. Forest Green Rovers in League 2 here in England, so the fourth division, have made history in English professional football, Gabby, by appointing Sonny Fana as a caretaker, the first female manager.
Okay, so it's a woman named Hannah Dingley. She was already the only, and I think this is more relevant, She was the manager of the academy side.
Yeah.
At some point it'll happen. Obviously, you know, this has already happened in other countries. You had the woman in France
in second division.
You had Carolina Morace coaching in the second division in Italy like 20 years ago. It's forward progress, I think, here in England. There's two things I got to underscore here. One is this is just an interim thing while they find a new boss. The previous boss, she
might be the boss.
It might be her. Duncan Ferguson, of course, was the previous boss. The other thing is, the guy who owns this club is, how can I say this nicely? I'm not saying this is a publicity stunt.
No, but he loves a bit of, yeah.
They like the publicity, yeah. Right? They're all like, oh, look, you know, I think they went, they're
vegan or
something. They went vegan with their not just like, we have vegan options, but like,
just,
you know, there's no burger bar there unless it's vegan burgers. So I wonder about it, but clearly to me it's more relevant that, and I didn't know this, that she was in charge of the academy, because that shows that she had real power.
Very successful.
She's 39 years old. Hopefully she's got a great future.
I hope she gets the job.
By the way, your friend Hector Bellerin, he's the second biggest shareholder at Forest Green Rovers.
Yeah, I think I knew this. Yeah, he invested in the club.
So if he's struggling to find a club, he can give himself a job in...
In League 2.
Why not?
Yeah.
Jules, that brings us to an end, not just for the show, but for the summer.
For the season, man.
For the season, that's right. But don't
worry.
It
was a great season.
We're going to be back in August, because there's a lot more football, course, coming your way. The Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, most notably. But until then, don't worry, we'll be back. We'll be taking care of you next year. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.